accession number 23216, reel 5.
Colonel Corbould, reel 5. Saying that Archer, two Germans came forward with their hands up.
Yes, and so we went forward to capture these two chaps, and one stepped to the rear, he got a pistol in his hand, and he shot one of my guardsmen dead. That put an entirely different complexion on the day's activities. I'll say no more.
Presumably they did not survive, the Germans.
Well, that particular chap did, but we dealt with him in a certain way, but didn't. We were very, very. We weren't very clever. We weren't very kind to some of the other Germans we were capturing in the course of the day. Mm. We weren't going to run that risk again.
Mm. On the whole, did the Germans behave properly and honourably in such matters?
On the whole, I think I must confess that they did. Mm. These, I think, were isolated examples. Mm. Oh, they were very professional, but.
This particular one broke the rules.
Broke the rules, and I'm afraid, well, he, and also, we didn't shoot him. I don't know why, but we didn't. But the others, during the course of the day, I'm afraid we weren't very kind to. Mm-hmm. Because by that time, blood was up.
Of course.
And of course, by this time, we were up on a hill, and it was razorback fighting.
Mm. I was going to ask you about where Archery was and what the ground was like there.
North of Casino. I think it was northwest of Casino, and
this was in the pursuit after Casino.
It was in the pursuit
really?
After Casino, yes. And we were rushed in further up the road on the backs of the tanks of the 1721st Lancers, who were our armoured regiment. Mm. And we got to a certain place where we had D bus or D tank, call it what you like, and. We came under very heavy shell fire, and the tank commander, I'd just spoken to him, and he got killed almost immediately as soon as I left the tank. It was a sort of direct hit on him, poor man. Sam Buxton by name.
How far from the German positions were you when you had to de-pass? What distance?
It's hard to say. You see, we were on the other side of the hill.
Oh.
And then we had to go. There were two hills, Monte Piccolo and Monte Grandi. Mm. And we were on Monte Piccolo. Mm. And we had the Welsh Guards on our right, and the Grenadiers were taking the left-hand hill.
So you were right in the middle, then?
We were right in the middle.
And you said there was a razorback ridge ahead of you.
That's right.
Yes.
And we had a most wonderful company from the Scots Guards in our battalion at that time, S Company. And they were on the left, and they did frightfully well. We had another company, my company, on the right, spread out along this long hill. And the Welsh Guards on the extreme end. And it was literally, just chasing after machine gun nests, and they'd fired us, we'd fired them. Mm. And it was a very hairy old performance.
Was this your first formal battle on more open ground?
Yes, for me it was, yes.
It was your advance to contact.
Advance to contact, yes.
When you were doing this attack, were you able to use the sort of tactics you've been taught?
Darn call, observe, sights, fire.
Exactly.
That sort of thing, yes. Battle really came in very useful indeed, yes, yes.
So it worked?
It worked, yes, yes.
And what about the principles of fire and manoeuvre at platoon level? Were you able to apply those?
Yes, one was. You see, the question of one section had to go forward, covering fire be given by the other section, and so on, till we got to the top of the hill. Yeah. And then the Germans had gone down. Then, of course, the Germans came back and did a counterattack, and we were then driven back. It was like a seesaw until finally, on this particular Sunday afternoon, the Germans had enough, and off they went.
So both sides were effectively operating from a reverse slope.
Correct.
Yes, like the Busaco Bridge.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
When you were doing this, did this ridge have any cover on it, which you could use?
Very little cover. And, of course, as you might imagine, like in all battles, an officer is a fairly prominent person, because someone's got to give the orders.
You
start waving your arms around, do this, do that, they'll make a go for you.
You were the priority target.
That's right, yes.
What sort of slope was it? Was it a steep gradient or a...
It was a gradual gradient.
Gradient, yes.
It was quite a thing getting up, because wearing full battle gear as well.
Of course.
Yes, it was a fairly gradual slope going up, and the same on the other side, too.
Had the Germans been able to establish deep dug-in positions on
they
this
had, yes.
ridge?
They had, yes. Not too deep. They weren't too deep, but they were deep enough to hold us up.
Mm. And what about the tanks? Were they able to give you any support?
At that stage, I don't think they were. No, because it was too much. It was too much off the beaten track, you know,
yes.
And coming across country and going through this village of Archie too.
Mm.
I don't remember any covering fire from tanks at that stage at all. No.
How were you giving your orders? Was it by field signs? Was it by shouting?
By shouting. Yeah. I mean, obviously, one briefed them before we went. Mm. One was told by one's company commander what one had to do. And so one went along, and one was the whole time encouraging the chaps as one went along.
Mm.
And then when it came into very close contact, you go right, you go left, do as I say, lie down, do this, do that, at the top of one's voice.
How close to the Germans did you get before they would make off on this particular attack?
Oh, on this particular attack, I mean, extremely. The Scots Guards had, and they had actually hand-to-hand fighting.
Mm. Mm.
Oh, yes, yes. It got as close as that.
Did you get into that sort of fighting, hand-to-hand bayonet fighting with...
Not with our particular platoon, no.
Mm.
I mean, we were all ready for it, but... I think there was the Scots Guards who had the hand-to-hand. Mm. There's a very famous picture, which you may have seen, by Terence Cuneo, the Battle of Piccolo, where you see the Scots Guards. There's one Scots Guard actually having a hand-to-hand contest with a rifle with a German.
What sort of Germans were you up against on this occasion? Did you?
I think it was still the Fallschirmjäger.
So you're still up against the paratroopers?
Yes. And of course, they were the real professionals.
Mm. When you got onto the crest the first time, you said that you got onto the crest. What did you do then? Did you start digging in, or were you occupying enemy positions, turning them round?
Well, it was really occupying and getting ready for a counterattack.
Yes.
Which sometimes the counterattack came, sometimes it didn't. It didn't come.
Mm. When they did make their counterattack, how did they carry it out? What did they actually do?
Well, it was very much the same as we were doing. I mean, they'd have. Usually a spandar giving covering fire from a flank or both flanks, and the other chaps charging forward, firing from the hip.
How did you beat them off? What?
Well, by, I suppose, better fire.
Just shooting back?
Just shooting back. Mm. Red blazing away, yes, yes.
I mean, were grenades useful in these?
Well, it was a bit difficult with a grenade because it was a two-edged weapon, really, because the ground, there was no actual cover. You see, so you flung a grenade, the chances are you'd be in the zone yourself for the thing to explode.
Mm.
No, I don't, in that particular case, I don't remember using a grenade then at all, no.
Did you lose any men on the way up during this fighting?
On that particular one, no, I didn't.
Mm. What about the enemy? How many casualties do you think you inflicted on them while you were
It's terribly hard to say.
Mm.
It's terribly hard to say. I mean... One walked the course as much as one could afterwards, and there were a lot of dead Germans lying around. Whether had you caused it? Had someone else been there before? I don't know.
Mm.
I wouldn't like to even suggest a figure for that at all.
And you did this as pure infantry fighting with no effective heavy support?
Pure infantry. And because of the closeness of the enemy lines, you couldn't call for artillery fire.
Huh?
So it was entirely... A small arms fire, your own small arms fire against the Germans' small arms fire.
How did the Bren gun perform in those?
It was
conditions?
Very good, actually. And of course, you see, we learnt so much about the immediate stoppages and so on, so for the IA of the Bren gun. The Bren gun was a very good weapon these days, yes.
Mm.
And not like the old Lewis gun, which of course was always jamming.
Well, they always had to operate in pairs.
Well, they did, yes. Mm. But I speak very highly of the Bren gun, like they very much indeed. It was easy to operate, and it wasn't too heavy to carry.
What did you carry as your personal weapon?
I carried a rifle and bayonet. And at this stage, it was rather amusing, they gave us like a sort of a pinafore to wear, a camouflage pinafore over our heads, so that our badges of rank couldn't be seen. I mean, our badges of rank were oxidized, they were black in any case. But, the only way that you'd be noticed it was an officer, it was a chap because he was waving his arms about and shouting out. But it was this sort of funny pinafore thing. It was tied up at the side.
Did everyone have one of those?
No, I think it was the officers.
Just the officers.
Well, I don't know. I think perhaps the others had it as well.
Mm.
It's a long time ago. I think they probably all must have had it, yes. So we all looked the same. And that's why I carried a rifle and bayonet. I looked like a guardsman.
Were you in danger from snipers? Were they?
Yes, very much so. Mm. Very much so, indeed. Mm. Yes.
How long did the fighting actually last before you finally managed to drive them off and secure the
Well, it started
position.
The night before.
Yes.
On the Saturday night, and we had to get into a sort of a bunker place. It was my platoon headquarters, because there was a hell of a lot of shell fire going on. And when we returned on the way back, coming on the following evening, when we came back out of the line, that particular bunker had a direct hit. So one said a very quick thank God for that.
Quiet prayer.
Quiet prayer, thanks. Then, so that was the night. We took up positions on the side of the hill, ready for the dawn attack, which we did. And the Germans left us at about tea time on Sunday afternoon. Mm. We were going to do an evening attack as well, but the message came through that the enemy had gone.
They'd gone.
The top of the hill was clear.
Did you follow them up? Was there an
at that stage,
pursuit?
No. No, because we were heading as fast as we could for Rome.
When you mentioned you were with the 17th 21st Lancers on the approach to Archer, had you worked with them before?
They'd been, I think, with the battalion in North Africa. I think so. Yes, there was a very close liaison with the 17th 21st Lancers, marvellous regiment.
Mm. When you were travelling on the tanks, how many guardsmen could you get on a single tank?
We've got a fit across somewhere. I suppose it was about six or something like that. Mm. Yes.
Presumably they were in the standard Sherman.
Oh yes, the Sherman. Right. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, where you could sort of hold on to, because you had a very different way you held on to because of the exhaust. You burn your hand, it's very badly. Yes, it was. We also piled on somehow, hung on somehow.
How did you actually communicate with the tank commander? Did you have to get on the turret and speak to him directly?
Well, whenever I got onto one of those tanks, the turret was always open. Mm. So one just shouted down to him.
Yes.
Or banged him on the shoulder.
Mm. Well, I think most tank commanders always preferred to go into action with their turrets open.
Otherwise,
they wouldn't be able to see anything.
That's right. And you see, this unfortunate man, Sam Buxton, he got a direct hit. That was very bad luck indeed.
Do you know what that was? Was that an anti-tank weapon or was it an artillery?
It was an artillery piece.
Round.
Mm. Or it could have been a sniper.
Yes.
It could have been a sniper. They're very much on the go in those days, yes.
Mm. You take an archery, and that had been must have been a rather strenuous fight going up, attacking up here.
It was an active enemy. Yes, a very active enemy indeed, yes.
What happened after that? You said you were making for Rome.
That was the last big engagement we had before Rome, I think. Oh. How far is Archer from Rome? I don't know. It's about, I suppose, this casino, then there's Archer, which must have been about 8-10 miles further on. And then there's Rome. We were all set to go into Rome on the I think it was the 5th of June, and for political reasons we were told to get off the road so that the Americans would go in there first. Mark Clark was the Bolshevik American commander, very fine general indeed, but he disobeyed orders from General, as he was then, General Alexander. And of course, he was determined to get to, for political reasons, to get there first. So we got there the day after. The Americans were there, yes. And it was all very unpleasant indeed, really, because not from the fighting point of view, but the Americans, it sounds rather a disloyal thing to say about one's great allies, and they were damn good soldiers. But we were furious. I was particularly furious about one particular incident when we got into Rome. And a lot of children came along, and one young boy came along and offered his sister for services to one of the guardsmen. And I was so angry, I cut this boy with a backhand straight round the ear, sent him flying. I was livid, you might well imagine. This is one's entry into the eternal city of Rome. Mm. It wouldn't do at all.
How did you enter? Did you enter on your feet?
On our feet, yes. And because it was an open city, there wasn't very much damage in Rome. There was some outside damage. None of the bridges were blown. And thank God for that. I mean, it's such a marvellous city. And then we camped just outside Rome and had a few days there going into Rome and so on and so forth, looking around. And then we're back into battle again. And I can't remember the name of the place. It's hard to remember all these exact. But I know it was in a cornfield.
Yes.
And one of my brother officers, who thank God is alive today, a man called Victor Lefanu. And he suddenly was going in the cornfield, and he came across a German at a very short distance, 5 yards. And the German shot him, and it went straight through his helmet, over the top of his head and out of the back of his helmet. And it's one of these copybook things one reads about, but that was an absolute fact. And he knocked him flying, of course, but then he had this mark of the bullet straight through his hair. And he's alive to this day, thank God.
Did he manage to return fire to the Germans?
I don't think he did. He was not flying.
Stunned.
Yes.
What happened in this attack through the cornfield? Do you remember how that went?
It was a close quarter fighting, which, in fact, we beat the Germans off. Yes. Mm. It sounds like we were always on the victorious side, but I'm telling you the truth. We were.
Mm. Well, the Allies did keep advancing.
Yeah, we kept on advancing. Yes. Mm. But then, of course, much further up Italy, it became, when it got more up to these various lines which the Germans built, that was a different matter. Mm. And we did have all these very close quarter experiences.
How many battles do you think you fought altogether then, close quarters?
Oh, my dear, Nigel, I dread to think. I can't, I suppose.
5 or 6, I think. Mm. It's quite a lot, actually, for close quarter stuff.
It is. So you can't remember where the battle in the cornfield was. Was this
north of Rome.
North of Rome.
Yes.
Was this a fight on a large scale?
No, this was a delaying action by the Germans. Yeah. They left the bodies of people behind, while the main part of the German army withdrew further north.
Forcing a rear guard.
That's right.
Yeah. Were they dug in this location?
No, they weren't. They were just scattered around. Yeah. They were mainly sort of snipers left. And they were very good shots indeed.
So presumably the idea would be to force you to deploy and stop you from pushing on rapidly.
Yes.
Did they have any support, or was it just pure infantry?
Well, it was pure infantry, but you see, we did these circling movements. We would spread right out and go round the back. Mm. And we hoped that the Germans were in the middle.
So they were in circles.
They were in circles, yes. Mm. Then, of course, we'd open fire from both sides. Again, being terribly careful. Because when you take that sort of manoeuvre, you can shoot each other.
You can, yes.
And we had to be very careful about that indeed.
Always the risks of overs, aren't there?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I mean, it's been calculated that in Italy, almost a third of Allied casualties were battle accident through that kind of
difficulty. Could well have been, yes.
I mean, do you know of anything of that sort happening within your own platoon or company?
Not within my platoon or company. Other than that, I was looking at our regimental history this afternoon, and I noticed that one of my great friends, to whom I spoke on the telephone this morning, oddly enough, he got wounded, and he said, battle accident, first time. But the other one was for real. Mm. But these battle accidents did happen, yes.
Mm. So you had the fight in the cornfield, and this is really a case of manoeuvring and mopping them up. Did any of them manage to get away, do you think, or were you able to round them all up?
I think we rounded them all up. I mean, certainly by the time we'd rounded up a lot of them, and they surrendered perfectly normally and so on, and we had no sort of trouble with them, not like the man who produced the pistol from his hand.
Yes. What happened after that then? Do you know where you went to after that fight north of Rome?
I got a complete... This was, it must have been June. My next engagement was at a place called Arezzo, which is south of Florence. We came out of the line, of course, in the meantime.
What did you do when you went out of the line?
Oh, rested, played football, or did something. Other. Did anything we could to keep the chaps fit, and to keep oneself fit, too. Terribly important to keep oneself fit under these circumstances.
But it's often said that actually being in the line degrades your fitness, because you cannot exercise and keep yourself...
Well, that is true.
This was so in
Casino. Mm. And it was almost claustrophobic,
yes,
as I said before. Mm. But no, the great thing was that we went to runs and we got the chaps playing football, had boxing matches and anything to keep the chaps fit and keep the fighting spirit going.
Mm. Did the fighting spirit need a boost, or was it still...
It was very much there to the fore. They were the most wonderful men to command, guardsmen. Mm. They were absolutely versatile. They would turn their hand to anything. And whatever the circumstances, you've never heard them moan at all. Oh, the odd sort of Yes, one heard it, sort of the language going on. But they were really magnificent men to command. And one had complete trust in them. And I hope they had complete trust in oneself.
What happened then at Arezzo when you were...
Well, Arezzo, now we... again, it was a hill climbing again. And we were going along, and we... there's a lot of snipers. And suddenly I saw advancing towards me a man who was a sniper with his rifle above his head and a white flag or white rag tied to it. And he surrendered, and he was a most enormous man. And I went towards him. I thought, no, gosh, is this chap going to change around or what? And I was just about to shoot him, actually. But he said no, and he was really surrendering. If I shot him, I'd have been guilty of a very grave error indeed. So we took him prisoner, and he went along with us. Then we handed him back down the line. Then we had a line up for an attack. On the start line, I got clobbered again.
Not your day.
Not my day. It was the 15th of July, 1944.
What was the ground like ahead of you on the start line? When you were looking forward,
it was pretty flat.
See?
It was fairly flat. And
was it cultivated?
I suppose it was. I didn't really take much notice of it. But I know I was forming up the chaps on the start line, and crash. And that was me.
What had happened?
Well, I got hit in the arms and so on and so forth. Not sent flying.
Was this a mortar round or a shell?
It was a shell, a piece of a shell, yes. Mm. And that saw me out then of the battle until the following February. It was from July.
So you were knocked over and badly wounded then at Arezzo, presumably, by
Yes.
Did you know anything about it when it happened, or was it...
Well, I thought I'd lost an arm at first, and I certainly thought I'd lost a hand, but luckily, no. And I was taken back.
How did you get back? Were you taken back by the stretcher bearers?
Yes.
How long did they... Do you have any idea of how long they took to come up and pick you up?
It was fairly quick, actually, because the attack hadn't started.
Well, presumably they were deployed quite well forward.
We were right, absolutely. No one was forward of us.
No, but the stretcher bearers would have been somewhere to hand. These were battalion men, weren't they?
Battalion men, yes. Well, not actually musicians, no. They were men who were medically trained, although they were ordinary guardsmen.
Yeah.
But they didn't to do the necessary things under the RA. We had this wonderful doctor called Elston Gray Turner, wonderful man, who got a military cross, and he trained these chaps wonderfully well.
And so you went back to him for the second time. What do you remember what he said to you?
Not you again, was it? And so that was that. Mm. And then off to, do you know, I can't remember where it was. I went to hospital after that. I can't remember where it was. And then I was there about, I suppose, a month or something like that, and wasn't able to go back to the battalion because I wasn't particularly fit. And then, a most amazing piece of luck, I became ADC to Field Marshal Wilson, and who was then the Supreme Allied Commander.
How did you manage to obtain that post?
Well, I don't exactly.
Marvellous post to have.
Well, it was, you see. They, because I couldn't go back to the battalion, they wanted a guardsman to go to the headquarters of the Supreme Allied Commander. So I went there, and a man called Mark Chapman Walker, a rifle brigade chap, because the field marshal was a rifleman. He said, "By goodness," he said, "this is a bit of luck." He said, "You're going to be an ADC." Thank you very much indeed. So I was marched into the field marshal. I said, "Oh yes, that's fine." So I became ADC to him for 2 months, I suppose it was. Yes. Then he went off to America to take over from Field Marshal Dill. And Field Marshal Alexander arrived.
He became Supreme Allied Commander.
That's right. And as he was short of an EDC at that time, and I still couldn't go back to the battalion, he said, "Right, you'll do or where's that effect?" Me. So I stayed on with Field Marshal Alexander until it must have been February, till February 1945.
Where was the headquarters of
Caserta?
Caserta. And what sort of place was that? And what was the headquarters?
Well,
like?
It was a most enormous palace, the Palace of Caserta, built for Italian kings over the centuries. A huge, vast. It was like Buckingham Palace, only larger. And I lived in the Field Marshal Villa in Naples, and we used to go to and fro.
He had to commute to work.
No, he lived in lived in a little cottage really, up in the grounds of Caserta.
Caserta.
Yes.
But you were in
Naples. I was in Naples, but he had endless guests, and it was my job then to look after all the guests who turned up.
I was going to ask you what your duties were as ADC.
Yes.
What were the main priorities?
The main priority there was looking after all the guests who came there, from Churchill downwards, and also taking them over to, obviously when Churchill came, the Field Marshal would come up to the Villa Rivalta, where it was called, where we had an operations room and a map room and everything else. And otherwise, I would have to take the guests to the Field Marshal in Caserta.
What sort of arrangements did the Field Marshal have in the palace at Caserta for command purposes?
Well, he had obviously Chief of Staff, who was General or Field Marshal John Harding, as he became, and General Robertson was the Chief Administrative Officer. The whole thing really permeated around them. And because Field Marshal Alex was a man of very few words, but he always liked to be going round the place when he wasn't up at the front line with the troops, which he did very frequently indeed. Then he would walk round the headquarters, and suddenly the door would open, and him would walk the Field Marshal, and this kept people on their toes, to no mean tune, I can assure you. And he would say very quietly, you know, "What do you do?" And everything would have to be answered and so on. So it all went in. He probably didn't make any comment at that time. But if he thought the chap shouldn't be there, then he was on his way.
And you mentioned that there was an ops room and a map room at the villa.
Yes.
What about at the palace? Was there?
Oh yes.
Where was that set up?
Oh, that was actually right. It was actually in the Field Marshal's office, in the SAC's office.
Where was his office? Was he in a ballroom or a?
Huge. It's a huge room which had been converted. Yes, and the next door room was like almost a drawing room.
Yes.
Is where the MA. Who was Mark Chapman Walker, and you may have read the book To War with Whittaker by Hermione Ranfley, where she was there as well, and there was another ADC. There were two ADCs, one another chap beside me.
Sounds like it was a very grand arrangement indeed.
It was a very grand arrangement indeed. Yes, yes.
What was Field Marshal Wilson like to work for?
Oh, delightful man, marvellous, delightful man, very friendly, huge.
He was known as Jumbo, wasn't he?
He was known as Jumbo, yes, yes, yes. A most delightful man to work for. And one got to know him really sort of well. Field Marshal Alexander, again, a wonderful man, but in many ways, as Nigel Nicholson says in his biography of Field Marshal Alex, he was very much an enigma. I think any people who really knew him really well were Lady Alexander and probably his sons. But he was a man of very few words.
Was Jumbo Wilson more loquacious? Did he?
Yes, 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 very much so. He had. I never met her at all, but I gather he had a very terrifying wife. I never met her though at all.
And what about Harding? What impression did you get of him?
Oh, marvellous! He was a most marvellous man, and totally easy to talk to, and he would almost sort of confide in one at times, you know, being the ADC and so on. And so I got to know him very, very well indeed. And also General Robertson too. It was a wonderful team. It really was a most marvellous team. We all got to know each other terribly well. But of course, when Field Marshal Wilson went, he took, of course, Mark Chapman Walker with him. And I don't know whether Hermione went or not. You must read the book To War with Whittaker, in which I mentioned. Although she spelled my name incorrectly.
And what were the guests? You mentioned that Winston Churchill turned up. How did you get on with him?
Well, I mean, what can I say? I mean, one saw him at close quarters, and when I was standing by the door when he arrived the first afternoon,